Everything about this case was so shocking. So why not the final chapter? Bill Cosby, beloved for decades, defeated, disgraced, imprisoned in scandal. Tonight, a free man. In the eyes of the law, not guilty. In the rubble of the Florida condo collapse, rescuers recovered the bodies of two young children today. That brings the death toll now to 18. 145 souls remain unaccounted for. Also tonight, breaking news on Donald Trump and an indictment of his organization. It's all next. Hello and welcome to Banfield. We begin with breaking news. Multiple outlets reporting that a grand jury in Manhattan has now handed up those indictments that were expected against both the Trump Organization, longtime family business of the 45th president, as well as its chief financial officer, Alan Weisselberg. The charges are expected to be formally rolled out tomorrow and unsealed, and are expected to center on unpaid taxes for perks and bonuses that were allegedly doled out to Weisselberg and his family. One former member of that family joins me now, Jennifer Weisselberg. She is the ex-wife of Alan Weisselberg's son, Barry, and she's been instrumental in this investigation. Jennifer, thank you so much for joining me at this late breaking hour. This news just coming down that, in fact, the indictments have happened. They've been handed up in this case. We didn't expect it till tomorrow. And tomorrow we are going to have them unsealed, but I suspect that you kind of have an idea of what we might see tomorrow, do you?
I believe it's tax related, but I'm not sure how broad it's going to be. You know how vast it's going to be.
Some of the early reports, Jennifer, are interesting. They talk about the bonuses, the luxury perks that Alan Weisselberg, the CFO of the Trump Organization, got, including an apartment in Manhattan, a leased Mercedes-Benz, private school tuition for at least one of his grandchildren. And I remember you and I talking a few weeks ago, and we talked about that being your kids and your ex-husband being a part of the Trump Organization. Do you think these charges are referring to these things?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is the little engine that could. When you are getting divorced and you're a mother and you're trying to provide for your children, it's different than just everything's compensated. But when you want to continue to provide for your children, but you can't because the org is paying for the tuition and the org is paying for the homes and the org is paying for, the cars, and you just want a right to be able to continue to take care of them. I just started fighting. I knew the taxes were not right. I just kept at it. I kept learning. I kept investigating. I just kept at it. And here we are. I can't believe it. I believed it was true, but I'm so thankful that all my fight and all my work day and night for the past since 2017 is here. It's here.
It is definitely here. This is the reporting that it's happening tonight, a day earlier than we expected. And we also hear that Alan Weisselberg and others from the Trump Organization are supposed to be appearing in court in the afternoon tomorrow. Cy Vance, the DA in Manhattan, they've met with you, the DA, often, several times. I remember seeing you rolling the luggage cart with documents. So what exactly did he ask you that led you to believe that these indictments were going to be specifically about perks that never, were taxed, never got taxed, or at least the taxes on these perks were never paid?
It didn't start out that way. It started out after Alan was deposed within the attorney general's office. They contacted me and they started asking me questions about anything I knew about, overvaluing, undervaluing loans. But then when I did the article on financial abuse with Bloomberg and I started to work on the taxes, they revisited the situation. And then we got deep into my documents that bleed into not just Barry, but Alan and Trump compensation, because that is my ex-husband's boss. I always knew that it was a generous gift, but I never knew how it would affect somebody.
Can I ask you, Jen, your former father-in-law is going to be appearing in court tomorrow, Alan Weisselberg. I mean, he's been with the Trump Organization for decades. Everybody has referred to him as the guy who knows where the bodies are buried, not literally, but figuratively. And, you know, I'm wondering what you think he has said or has not said. I'm wondering what you think he will do in court tomorrow or what he won't do. What do you think?
This is the first time I've seen Alan actually have to humble himself and take accountability. I heard that he had a new attorney that was related to taxes, and maybe there was just some conversation about the fact that this wasn't legal. This is not legal. This affected so many people that lost in the Trump Payroll Corporation, people that worked there, you know, and I'm happy that he's gonna turn himself in. I'm just afraid that there's not gonna be real accountability. But I don't doubt the DA has done an amazing job, and they've worked really hard at proving this. You know, I can give them the documents, but it's on them to have proved it. They did the work. And it's complicated. It's very complicated.
And Jen, just one last question, because anybody who's watching this, they may be slightly removed from all of this. It's very arcane, lots of details. They might sort of know Weisselberg. They might know that name, but not know why. The big question for a lot of Americans is the 45th president of the United States going to end up in a courtroom? Is he ever going to be a part of this? You've told me that he was in that organization and knew everything, in every meeting, made every decision. Is the president, the former president of the United States, in your assumption, going to be a part of this or be brought into court anytime soon?
I think if you look back with any company, whether it's Tyco, Enron, Bernie Madoff, I think the person that whose company it is, my father's CEO, they are responsible. They are responsible for running a company. That is their job. He knew everything that was going on. He was happy to save on taxes. He doesn't pay taxes. Taxes are about the government. You can't be the government and scam the government. Absolutely. If you didn't want to hire Alan anymore and you didn't think it was good, he could have let him go. It's Donald's company.
Yeah. Jennifer Weisselberg, I can't tell you how much I appreciate this exclusive interview with you. I know your phone is blowing up since all of a sudden the name Weisselberg, Alan Weisselberg, has been indicted and the rest, you know, the Trump Organization. So thank you so much. And I look forward to speaking to you again, certainly after this, you know, indictment is unsealed tomorrow when we find out the formal charges and the details. Thank you.
Yes, we'll look forward to seeing what it is, right?
Indeed, indeed. Okay, so Jennifer Weisselberg joining us on News Nation on the show Banfield. Very excited to be able to speak with her so quickly after this news has broken. And boy, what a busy day in news it was. You've heard this a million times. What you say can and will be used against you. Apparently not always. The ruling that seemed to come out of nowhere today, throwing out Bill Cosby's conviction on 3 counts of sexual assault and sending him home a free man, boils down to one simple point. The prosecutor used Bill Cosby's own words against him after the previous prosecutor promised Cosby he would not. And so after 3 years in a maximum security prison near Philadelphia, the entertainer, once considered as wholesome as Jell-O pudding, stepped out into the sunshine. And looking every bit his 83 years, but not saying a word, just standing behind those around him with his eyes closed. Those, by the way, very jubilant lawyers standing with him. Bill Cosby, or at least somebody, did post a tweet under his name saying, in part, "I have always maintained my innocence," and thanking the Pennsylvania Supreme Court for, quote, "upholding the rule of law." Enter my guests, Tom Mesereau is a criminal defense attorney who represented Bill Cosby in this matter, in fact. Tanya Acker is a former litigator who now appears on a top-rated show on television called Hot Bench. Her new book is Make Your Case, Finding Your Win in Civil Court. And Lisa Bloom is a lawyer and legal commentator who represented three of Cosby's accusers in the past. She is going to speak with us about this case and the effect on those accusers. We are also joined by one of Cosby's dozens upon dozens. Let's put the number at 60 or so, give or take. Our count at least has it that high. Lisa Lott Lublin, welcome to all three of you. I'm going to start with Lisa, if I can. Lisa, this news was hard for a lot of people to digest. I can only imagine what this was like for you to digest, knowing that Bill Cosby's at home with his family instead of in prison.
Well, it was really a punch in the gut for me and the clients who I represent, who for so many years tried to get justice against Bill Cosby. Janice Dickinson, in particular, who had the courage to go and testify as one of the prior bad acts witnesses in his criminal trial. You know, her whole life upended. She sacrificed maybe her civil case to go and testify in the criminal case, knowing that her testimony could be used against her and could undercut her in the civil case. And it was such a great day when he was finally convicted. You know, it was just a tiny bit of justice, Ashley, just a tiny, tiny bit. One victim, Andrea Constand, and 3 to 5 years for that one victim, even though, as you say, 60 women have accused him of really serious allegations, most of them saying that he drugged and raped them, which is what Janice said. We scored a big win for Janice ultimately in her civil case. We won a couple big appellate rulings, but nothing undercuts the pain that the victims are going through today.
Yeah, it is. It is a lot. Let me jump over as well, because obviously with a lot of breaking news, a lot of voices are, you know, we need to hear a lot of voices. And Tom Mesereau is certainly one of those people close to Bill Cosby who, you know, who defended Bill in the first trial that ended in a hung jury. And I know, Tom, you're on the phone with us, but your voice is critical in all of this. Your reaction to what the Supreme Court in Pennsylvania did today, basically throwing out that conviction, overturning it and saying to the DA, and you can't get a third bite at this apple. You cannot go back and even try him again on these charges. Your thoughts, Tom?
I think it's a great day for the Cosby family, and it's a great day for the justice system. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court has a long history of very courageous, independent, highly intelligent decisions, and they did the right thing. Bill Cosby did not have a fair trial. He should not have even pushed into a courtroom because there was a prior agreement by the prior DA not to prosecute him, and he relied on that agreement. And prosecutors are held to a high ethical standard. You can't have one prosecutor agree not to prosecute him and then lose an election and have the next one throw the agreement out. Our justice system would have no coherence. It would have no strength. It would have no great reputation if that kind of thing went on. I just feel bad that Bill had to go through two trials because he shouldn't have been prosecuted at all. And this idea that he got off on a technicality is ridiculous, because the reason the prior district attorney decided not to prosecute him was he looked at the evidence and thought it was a weak criminal case. This wasn't just a technicality. He made a substantive decision that it wasn't a strong case, and Mr. Cosby and his prior lawyers relied on that agreement and that representation. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court absolutely did the right thing. It's a great day for the justice system, and as I said before, a great day for the Cosbys.
Tom, thank you for your assessment. And I have to agree with you on the technicality aspect, although for those who aren't familiar with the law, sometimes they see procedural stuff as a technicality, because effectively what happened today was nothing close to exonerating Bill Cosby. It just basically was a due process issue whereby the Pennsylvania Supreme Court said, you know what? The law wasn't followed here, and we are a nation of laws. It didn't weigh in at all on the merits of the actual case itself. And to that, I want to bring in Lisa Lott Lublin, who in 1989 met with Bill Cosby as a young woman and 23-year-old model, thinking that Bill Cosby was going to mentor her. He knew her mom. He knew her sister. And is one of the accusers. Lisa, I have to call you an accuser. I think you're with your husband, Benjamin, as well. And I appreciate you guys coming on the air, because this is sensitive stuff. I have to call you an accuser now, because effectively, you know, that one case that involved Andrea Constant made him guilty of sexual assault, but now he technically is not. I want to get your feelings about what happened today.
Still processing a lot of my feelings, but I still have a fire inside of me. I still want to see change, and I still feel that even though he's getting out now, or he's out now, he still paid partial price for what he's done. He spent many, many days, 2.5 years in prison. He is not the same person that he was previously, and he'll never be the person he portrayed himself to be previously. So again, like you said, he's still guilty. Just because he got off doesn't mean that he didn't do these acts. He did them.
I think in the minds of a lot of the accusers, and let's be clear, there are more than 50, upwards of 60. And so in the minds of the public, he's guilty. Technically, though, in a court of law, he isn't. And I think that would be very unsatisfying to many. And I think you're magnanimous for saying that you believe even that the years that he spent, the 2 years, are part of the punishment. I'm going to take a quick break. But when we come back after the break, I want to touch on a couple of other things that are really important in all of this. What's next? You know, is it possible? Is it possible that, in fact, he could be tried again on something else? I'm going to dig into how that could happen. Also going to talk about some of his supporters like Felicia Rashad, his TV wife on The Cosby Show, and the controversy she churned up today. That's coming up next. Welcome back. We are talking about today's bombshell ruling that led to Bill Cosby spending this evening at home in his own bed instead of in his prison cell in Pennsylvania. Tom Mesereau, who once represented Bill Cosby, is with me tonight. Tanya Acker from the hit TV show Hot Judge, and also Lisa Lublin is with me. She alleges that she was assaulted by Bill Cosby long ago and is outside the statute of limitations, otherwise might have some recourse here, which is why this becomes such a big story. So, Judge Tanya, I want to ask you a couple of things about the process here and going forward, because most people felt, well, is there a chance there could be another trial, even though there's been two? And we know now that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court said no, not on this case, not on Andrea Constant. But Judge, that doesn't necessarily mean that there couldn't be someone else out there lurking who hasn't been public and who may have a case that happened within the statute of limitations. Am I wrong?
If it's a different case that happened within the statute, that certainly leaves open the possibility of an additional prosecution. But, you know, as you pointed out, Ashley, with respect to this case, it's absolutely over. It's not over because the Supreme Court said that Bill Cosby was innocent of these charges. It's over because the Supreme Court said that the prosecutor didn't follow the rules. It's not just that Castor made that earlier statement that he wasn't going to prosecute, but it's the fact that Bill Cosby relied on that decision not to prosecute and giving the subsequent testimony in the civil case. That testimony was used against him in a later criminal prosecution. And so that's what the court found was unfair. So as long as it has nothing to do with, as long as it's not the facts that were at issue in this case, and as long as any subsequent prosecution is premised on something that took place within the applicable statute of limitations, then, you know, you possibly could see another attempt.
Tom Mesereau, I would love for you to just weigh in as well regarding what it feels like to be an officer of the law, and then hear the Montgomery County DA say these words: Cosby was found guilty by a jury and now goes free on a procedural issue that is irrelevant to the facts of the crime. We still believe that no one is above the law, including those who are rich, famous, and powerful. Does it bother you at all that there has been no finding of fact regarding the guilt or innocence of Bill Cosby, and that so many people out there have so many accusations against him?
Well, first of all, I want to emphasize what I said before. The agreement not to prosecute was based on a substantive review of the evidence, and the prior district attorney concluded there was insufficient evidence to bring a criminal case. That's not a technicality. That's a substantive look at the evidence. That's what the DA concluded, and his agreement not to prosecute was based on that analysis. So let's not call this strictly a technicality. A substantive review of the evidence led the prior DA to decide this didn't belong in a criminal court. He concluded it belonged more in a civil court. So that's the premise on which he made his decision. What the Supreme Court did today of Pennsylvania was uphold that agreement. They said the next DA, for political reasons, can't just scuttle an agreement when the prior DA held that there was insufficient evidence to bring a criminal prosecution. So let's not keep calling it a technicality. There was a
so I just want to say, Tom, that it's not, yeah. It's they weren't calling it a technicality. I just read their words verbatim, and the DA called it a procedural issue. I didn't call it a technicality. They didn't call it a technicality. Maybe someone else is, but the DA said a procedural issue, which I think is, you know, it's fair to call it a procedural issue.
No, it was
issue,
not. But, it was not just a procedural issue at all. The prior district attorney reviewed the evidence and concluded there was insufficient evidence to bring a criminal case. That's not just a procedural issue. That's a substantive decision that this does not belong in a criminal court. The next DA wants to call it procedural because he just got embarrassed. The case has been thrown out. It went through two trials that cost millions of dollars to the residents of that county, and it was a big, fat waste of time.
So, you know, there's someone who agrees with you for sure, Tom, and that is his former colleague and friend and co-star on The Cosby Show, Felicia Rashad. She tweeted out today, earlier on today, this, and I will read it verbatim. Finally, four exclamation points, a terrible wrong is being righted. A miscarriage of justice is corrected. And then later, I don't know how things changed, but Felicia Rashad sent out another tweet, walking that back slightly, and said this: I fully support survivors of sexual assault coming forward. My post was in no way intended to be insensitive to their truth. Personally, I know from friends and family that such abuse has lifelong residual effects. My heartfelt wish is for healing. Lisa Lott Lublin, is that satisfying?
That's not satisfying because it's always a contradiction with her. One minute it's one way, and then it's convenient when she, you know, wants to come back and make herself look okay. It's not okay. How does she know the truth? How, in what manner does she have the truth? Because she is not obviously a victim of his, but there are victims of his. So why does she just choose to blatantly believe the person that's accused from so many women? I just don't understand the mindset. It doesn't make any sense.
So many women. You're right. I mean, over 50 to 60. So, Judge Aker, I want you to weigh in on something, and that is that he may be walking free and unindicted and uncharged and unconvicted, but there is the court of public opinion, and there are all those women, all the stories, and then there is his background. I want to play for you something from 1969. It was on his album called It's True, It's True, in which he delighted in the notion that Spanish Fly was a very effective way to get women under your spell, so to speak. I'll let him speak for himself. This is Bill Cosby's album, It's True, It's True, 1969.
You know what? You know anything about Spanish Fly? No, tell me about it. Well, there's this girl, Crazy Mary. You put some in her drink, man. She... Yeah, Spanish... Oh, yeah, that's really groovy, man. Spanish Fly is groovy, yeah, boy. From then on, man, anytime you see a girl, well, yeah, some Spanish Fly, boy.
Judge Aker, there's a few people who would laugh about that kind of a joke today. Maybe it was different in 1969. But do you think that the lore of Bill Cosby's past and the accusation against him will stay with him as he goes about his life, a free man right now?
Oh, to be sure, Ashley. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Look, this recent court decision and frankly, the trial in itself really just point out the limits of what a court case can decide and not decide. Tom Mesereau is right that when Bruce Castor said he's not going to prosecute, he did that because he didn't think he could make the case based on the unreliability of witness testimony and the like. So that was a substantive decision. However, that's simply a decision about whether or not a prosecutor has enough evidence or doesn't have enough evidence. There's only to move forward. That's all that a court decision can really, that's all that you can decide when you come to court. The bigger picture issues, the things that people read in the deposition, the statements that people read Mr. Cosby make, I mean, those are there. People aren't going to unremember those things.
You know, Thank you for mentioning that. I just want to close this out with Bill Cosby's own words from the deposition, if you'll give me that moment, my guests. The question to Bill Cosby, when you got the Quaaludes, was it in your mind that you were going to use these Quaaludes for young women that you wanted to have sex with? And the answer from Bill Cosby was yes. That won't go away. You're absolutely right. Thank you to all of my guests as you, sort through what's happened today and the very complex legal issues. Tom Mesereau, thank you. Lisa Bloom, Tanya Acker, and Lisa Lott Lublin, thank you as well. We really appreciate your bravery for coming forward. We are back with some other breaking news, including what happened in Miami today and the update on that terrible, terrible collapse. Big news there. And also someone else who's left us, someone who made a huge impact on this country. Probably know Larry Wilmore as a correspondent from The Daily Show, the senior black correspondent, or maybe as the anchor on Wilmore, The Nightly Show. But he's also been a creative force behind the scenes, running the gamut from In Living Color to Black-ish, and a lot more, too. Bernie Mac, Fresh Prince. Larry Wilmore, you are such a busy guy. And as, a famous comedian, successful comedian, I would be remiss to not ask about this massive news of the day. I know we booked you to talk about all your projects, but my God, who among the comedic community didn't have Bill Cosby as, a mentor or someone they looked up to? I just wanted to get your reaction to this news today that he's been released.
First of all, thanks for having me on, Ashley. It's, I've always been a fan of yours for so long, and you were gracious enough to do my show. It's so great to see you.
It's good to see you, too. I wish we could be just talking funny stuff,
Oh, it's okay. Look, I have a lot of mixed feelings about this. If you want to run the gamut of it, Bill Cosby was a trailblazer in comedy, of course. He influenced a generation of comedians. Certainly was a role model for many people. But this crime that Cosby was accused of by over 60 women of rape was a horrendous crime. And I spoke about it a lot on my show. Jokingly, I said, "I haven't forgotten about you, MF," was what I said. I don't know if I can say that here. But it wasn't
completely
a joke.
You can.
Okay, I haven't forgotten about you, mother. What did I say? But what I was saying with that, actually, is, really, I haven't forgotten about the women, who were voiceless in this and powerless in this, and how the law has always protected powerful men in these types of cases. The Me Too movement, thank God, has, a little bit tried to even this playing field of injustice, And so to me, I know that everyone is granted their 14th Amendment rights. I just did a special on the 14th Amendment, by the way. It's called Mint on Netflix. And our country is designed to protect people with the law. That's what our laws are for, right? Unfortunately, people aren't protected equally from crime, And so that's how.
But you know something, Larry? You know what's amazing is that we were going to do this interview and focus a lot on I'll say the name, Amend, the Fight for America. It's with Will Smith. I mean, hello. Yeah. But the 14th Amendment is what you really drill down on. And I don't think a lot of people yet have gotten down and dirty on why this happened today, why Bill Cosby was released. And a lot of it has to do with exactly the things you're drilling down on the show. Right. We are a nation of laws. And this yes, a technicality, but it wasn't a bad technicality. It was an important technicality that also protects the innocent and protects the system. And that's hard to hear when they're, like you said, are 60-ish women out there who are devastated today.
Yes, you're absolutely right, Ashley. And it's important that we not focus on the person it's protecting, but the system that it's protecting, you know, because that system will protect the low and the mighty, you know, and all those things. Just wait your turn, really. The 14th Amendment has been important just from deciding on gay marriage, for goodness sake. You know, it's protected people in so many different ways that are have been unexpected, including the women's movement, the equal rights and all that kind of stuff. But I am saddened that it feels like the long arm of justice, as they say, has, I don't know, needs Tommy John surgery right now, because it just doesn't seem to be working in this particular case. But you know what? That's another sobering thing, too, is that it doesn't always work out like that. And here's the thing that does kind of give me hope, Ashley, is the fact that these women were courageous enough to tell their stories, you know, and to come out, and that hopefully these types of things aren't going to be happening in the way that they did, because Cosby's not the only person that got away with this stuff. He's the most famous person that got away with it, you know, that we know. But people have gotten away with this type of behavior for a long time, you know, and suffered no repercussions for it or legal.
Well, good. I'm glad you I'm so glad you brought that up, because and I love that you can speak on so many fronts here as a comedian, as a black comedian as well, because sometimes people bring race into the Cosby story, even though today we're not hearing it as much. Also, because there was a Jeffrey Epstein, right? And and Harvey Weinstein, and they're white dudes who, you know, did this and got punished for it. But there is that notion that are black people targeted way more for these crimes than the white folks who did it. I think with the Epstein and the Weinstein, it's hard to make that argument with Cosby. But I think that element still gets discussed.
It does. In this case, I think it's a bit of a non sequitur, because I think in this case, we're really talking about powerful men, and we're talking about women who don't have agency in this fight. It's not an equal fight. You know, and Cosby did this as a famous, powerful person, not as an unknown person, you know, just unknown black person facing the law or something. And he had you know, society on his side in terms of how these types of things were decided. Harvey Weinstein, you know, I don't think anyone's rushing to embrace Harvey Weinstein. Jeffrey Epstein, you know, killed himself. Those are all horrible, horrible things, you know. But I don't see race playing a part in this at all. It might play a part in how people are reacting to it, maybe, but I don't think it plays a part. And in fact, let's be clear about this, Ashley. The case that he went to prison for was for raping a black woman. So if there's going to be race in it, let's focus on the black woman who was raped in this situation.
So I have to be super careful. Obviously, on the air, I always have to say, well, now we don't have a conviction on rape, and it was a sexual assault. So just to protect all the legalities of what Cosby really is, because he's just you and me now, right? He's a free citizen without a conviction, legally speaking. It doesn't mean, as they said. Yeah, go ahead.
The technicality was that he admitted to it, and that wasn't allowed to be used, because the deal was, you can say that you did this, but we won't be able to use it. Not that he didn't do it. No one on the team is suggesting that he didn't do it. It was the manner in which this evidence was used was improper, which, like we said, they are correct.
And there have been many statements said today right along that line. This does not exonerate him of these crimes. It just says that technically we should not have prosecuted him, and we have to throw that out. It's like the fruit of the poisonous tree is the way that it's usually expressed. Okay, I've got a million more questions for you about this and also your podcast and your projects and the senior black correspondent stuff you've done. So when we come back after the break, Larry Wilmore is going to stick with me. Back right after this. If you could team up with Will Smith, Well, that would be a pretty safe bet, wouldn't it be? And that's what my guest Larry Wilmore has done in the Netflix documentary series Amend, The Fight for America. And, you know, I had intended to talk all about your comedy work and the work with Will Smith, and then along came Bill Cosby's news today, which I think for all comedians is something that you kind of have to digest in a weird way, because we all laughed, you and me alike, our whole lives at Bill Cosby's remarkable, remarkable work. Should we ever laugh again at his comedy before, now that we know what he was doing back then?
I mean, I don't know. It's I honestly don't know how to answer that. I mean, I guess if you can get that out of your mind, but that's an individual thing. But I'm really not so much concerned about that. You know, I've always been focused on the justice part of it, that someone is getting, should be getting the justice that's due them. But you know what? I mean, for some people, it doesn't matter that they separate those two things, you know. But
I mean, yeah, right? I love Michael Jackson's music. I hate the things that he was accused of doing and convicted of doing. And I love Picasso. And it is a very hard personal journey to enjoy art and separate, you know, crime from art. Let me ask you a little bit about Amend, because you worked with Will Smith on this. I want to play a quick clip of it for our audience so that they know the touchy-feely part of it all. And then I'm going to ask you about it on the other side. Take a look.
Mean to be an American.
This land is your land.
What about a citizen?
This land is my land.
The original Constitution is silent on the subject of citizenship.
From California.
It doesn't have any statement of who is a citizen or who isn't.
In that space of this undefined term citizen, racism was allowed to flourish.
At the heart of the 14th Amendment is the definition of citizens in America.
Ha, citizens. This is something near and dear to my heart because I had to earn mine. I had to work for it. I didn't get born into it. But it's a super interesting area to mine, Larry, because a lot of us all have shared experiences. And yet, what the heck happened in this country where we're just all so divided?
Yeah, I was so excited to do this project. I met with Will a few years ago. This was maybe 2018 when we were first talking about it. You know, just this question of who is a citizen? Who is this country for? You know, and when we had to answer that question the first time when citizenship was granted to blacks, it created this whole new way of looking at the relationship that individuals have within this country to the country itself. 14th Amendment is fascinating. I was so happy to be a part of it. I learned so much about it. You know, I brought my own perspective to it. There's so many people who are involved in it. It's a different type of documentary storytelling. It's kind of performative in some aspects. You know, we use everything from animation to actors in it. And it's all to understand a little different thing about this country. What is our relationship to this country? Who's the country for? What is the citizen? Answering those simple questions. And it opens up everything. And it's amazing how useful the 14th Amendment has been in so many different types of cases, as you know, Ashley. It's fascinating. I had no idea.
Oh, man. When I started working in legal journalism like a million years ago, I kept saying, 14th Amendment, I got to read that. Is that the citizen thing or the equal protection thing? And then I have this little, you know, copy of the Bill of Rights, the Constitution in my desk just to keep referring to it. It is important. A ton of cases we don't know about are based on equal protection clause. Okay, so the other thing I want to ask you about, Larry, is your podcast, because I think you're doing a lot of what I'm doing, you know, interviewing like the Helen Hunts of the world, Wanda Sykes, Malcolm Gladwell, Willie Geist, Lee Daniels, Fran Lebowitz are some of your recent guests. You're kind of just going all over the place and getting interesting people on your podcast. It's called Black on the Air. I love that.
Thanks for bringing that up. You'll have to come on. I would love to have you on. I wanted to do a podcast where I talk to people I'm interested in, you know, and subjects that I'm interested in. I've talked about UFOs. I had Neil deGrasse Tyson on, and we talked about everything from physics to the existence of God. I've had politicians on. Of course, we've talked about racial issues and that sort of thing. We've talked about women's issues, you know, especially sexual assault and that type of thing when that was happening at Fox News and had some people on. So we've covered so many different subjects, and there's so many different interesting people across the spectrum. And I love it. You know, I'm sure you love that type of stuff too. Just really, you know, pulling information out of people and engaging in a conversation and that type of thing. It's one of the funnest things that I'm doing right now.
Well, I love interviewing, you know, people in the entertainment business who are super duper smart, right? Who are engaged. And I was like, I know you, right? We've met before. I've been on your show, but I didn't know some things about you. And I looked at your resume and I'm like, hold on. He's wrote for Living Color, Fresh Prince, Bel Air, Bernie Mac, Daily Show, obviously, Nightly Show. He's got an Emmy and a Peabody. I didn't know all that stuff about you. I didn't know you were, but what's going on? Like, I want to see more of you on camera.
You know, this brother's got a few chaps. You know, I've always, I've been fortunate. I've had the type of career where it's been both in front of and behind. And maybe it's my personality. I don't put all of my, you know, stuff out there all the time. But I was the first Black person to win an Emmy for the writing of a sitcom, you know, an individual writing. It was a huge honor. In 2001 or 2002, I believe that was. And, you know, that type of thing was one thing was kind of my mission, was to hopefully make the shows that we're doing, that Black people in the business were respected in the way that other shows were, you know, that they could be called smart shows and not just funny shows. That was one of my missions with doing shows like Bernie Mac Show or even the PJs or even working on the Daily Show. And when I did the Nightly Show, it was important for me to have a Black woman head writer. You know, that didn't happen in late night, that type of thing. And to have Robin Thede, who's now crushing it out in the world with Black Lady Sketch Show, to do things like that. So both having goals myself of things that I want to do, Ashley, but also I've always loved opening the doors and helping other people get through there, you know, holding that door open and saying, come on in, everybody, come on through, you know, has always been a thing that I really, really enjoy. I love mentoring young people and that sort of thing, too. It's really a lot of fun.
I'm glad you're doing it, and thank you for all you've done, and thank you for making me laugh so often. Let me remind everybody, Larry Wilmore, that Black on the Air, the podcast, and Amend, they're both at, well, that's streaming now on Netflix. You can catch them both. The great and talented Larry Wilmore.